We go to Wellington for Midweek Media Watch with Colin Peacock. Good evening.
Hi, Karen.
First up, sports broadcaster Martin Devlin. He's got his foot back in the door.
Yes, indeed. That's Martin Devlin of News Talk ZB, formerly Radio Sport for many years. In fact, they named his own show after him, the Devlin Radio Show, DRS as it's called. He was stood down back in late May, so a bit of background to this. Stuff broke the news that he'd aimed a blow inaccurately. He'd missed a junior colleague, and this was actually during a show that he was broadcasting, and this had happened about 10 days earlier. Stuff reported that this altercation happened in the kind of open plan office that's shared by ZB and the New Zealand Herald in Auckland, so, you know, probably would have been fairly widely witnessed. And then after Stuff broke that story, a statement from Martin Devlin himself was issued and published by NZME, in which he confirmed that this had happened, Martin Devlin, and also it said that he'd sent inappropriate messages, as they were called, to other colleagues. He acknowledged his behaviour was wholly unacceptable and he was getting help with anger and other issues. But he said he'd been allowed to go back on air, which he then did. He appeared on the air the following Saturday as scheduled and made a bit of a statement to his audience about it and said he wanted to kind of draw a line under it. But then after that, further details were reported actually by the Herald, which is part of NZME, that there were other complaints about him from at least two other people, and that the victim, the person that was the victim of this missed punch, wasn't actually happy with the internal investigation and the way it had been done. So Martin Devlin was stood down again and a more thorough kind of external review carried out. Earlier this month, Stuff reported that Martin Devlin had been overheard in a cafe saying he would soon be back on the air. And then yesterday, Stuff reported that an email to staff had leaked out to NZME staff saying that Martin Devlin would be back on air in due course. And today, the story moved on again. Stuff's Simon Plum reported that he understood that the junior colleague that had been the target of that missed punch had actually left NZME, but also signed a non-disclosure agreement in exchange for a settlement. So the headline on that story was, Martin Devlin's young victim leaves NZME as punch-throwing radio host keeps his job, which is quite a headline and quite a situation.
Have the NZME given any reason as to why he's been given a green light to return, or what those allegations were in regard to inappropriate messages to other colleagues?
No, not at all. In fact, the email that leaked out, this is from the chief editor or managing editor at NZME, Shane Curry, telling staff that the independent investigation, the second one, into the latest allegations had found neither complaint was substantiated. So this is confusing because without any documents or evidence or any knowledge of this independent investigation or its terms of reference or anything, the questions, you know, are sort of, were these complaints just chucked out or found to be not true, not credible, unproven, denied by Martin Devlin? We just don't know. So without that knowledge, you know, we can't really know what conclusions were reached. And right at the first stage, when he first, the story broke and the prepared statement that obviously had ready, to announce that he would be back, that referred to caveats about his return to work. So, you know, he was kind of on notice. But we don't, that's never been declared either. So, yeah, there's lots of questions raised by, you know, what's been reported so far. But, you know, there could well be more in coming days.
And this comes at a time, of course, Colin, when the culture of media companies is under greater scrutiny.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Stuff, Alison Moore and her team, the Me Too team that's been reporting, they've done a fair amount on the media and entertainment industries. MediaWorks, another media company, has an ongoing review by QC Maria Dew of its workplace culture because of claims of harassment and bullying there. Those mainly centred around its music radio station. Some employees at The Rock got stood down. I think they were later said to be cleared by an investigation. But while this wider one by the QC Maria Dew was going on, and that we don't know in public what the nature of those allegations was either. So it's kind of not at all clear that for all this examination and all these sort of tests of what conduct's acceptable and what isn't, where the line is at our media companies. And also that aspect of if it's all correct, this non-disclosure agreement in the case of Martin Devlin and the person who's now left the company, if indeed that's correct, that's a bit worrying because, you know, media companies demand and expect transparency from others. You think of reporting of politics, all that stuff at Parliament, the Trevor Mallard situation, all of that. you know, they want a disclosure. They say it's in the public interest, but the media companies themselves, you know, don't seem keen to follow it when, you know, I guess they've got high profile people and, you know, big media brands they need to protect. Maybe that comes first. You know, hard to know without knowing the specifics, but you know, it was pretty clear. Stuff complained that, you know, they'd been asking about that very first incident for 7 or 8 days before and getting no response from NZME about what Martin Devlin had done in the studio, and yet they had a statement ready to go as soon as Stuff eventually published its story without NZME's comment. So, you know, when you consider them in the past, they've also had the Tony Veitch incident where he was brought back on air. Yeah, I think this doesn't reflect well with their public that care about more than, you know, what's on the air and their favourite host being there.
And now you want to talk about something that you mentioned on Media Watch on the weekend, and this was the sudden pullout of US troops in Afghanistan.
Yeah, I thought this was a really big story. You know, the war's gone on for 20 years. New Zealand had thousands of personnel serving there. 10 of them died. Not much in it in our media apart from, you know, this very sudden pullout. The American president said they'd leave by September. They left without warning, possibly for security reasons, last weekend, leaving only a handful of troops. So effectively, that's it. Their so-called forever war is over. Q&A's Jack Tame. TVNZ's Jack Tame, he thought the same as me. I think he tweeted out that it's fascinating to see how little the media has covered this. It's the conflict of the century so far. He says, you know, news coverage and analysis has been sparse. And then his show Q&A, you know, was actually on air at the same time as Media Watch.
What did he have to say on Q&A about it? Or I guess you didn't watch it.
No, well, this is why, you know, at the same time I was on the air saying, well, not much in the media about it. You know, there they are actually doing it. They interviewed the former Minister of Defence, Wayne Mapp, who, you know, it's interesting that he's one of few New Zealand former ministers who's prepared and willing to speak about, you know, things that happened in his time in office. He had to front up to that Operation Burnham inquiry. So I guess with Afghanistan, he kind of had no choice. But he's also written about it on the Pundit blog and other places. So he fronted up on Q&A and said, look, it wasn't a mistake to go into Afghanistan in 2001 after Al-Qaeda, you know, which, you know, of course, the American-led effort after the Twin Towers atrocity. He said it wasn't wrong to go as part of an international coalition, but he said, yeah, look, clearly the nation building after getting rid of the Taliban was not a success. But he also made this interesting revelation.
Well, in hindsight, you might say yes. I remember in 2009 at the various ministers' conferences at NATO and in Europe that we were told that the surge, which had been engineered by President Obama, would take longer than we thought to be effective. That was the military advice we were getting. But no one actually thought they could actually stay as long as the military said we needed to.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. He's saying that was never reported to the public back in 2009, and that was before New Zealand soldiers started to die. But sort of shades of the Vietnam situation in there, where if what he's saying is right, you know, the US and their allies kind of sat on information that suggested they really couldn't achieve their objectives, but, you know, had to carry on for years anyhow because, you know, they couldn't get an acceptable deal with their enemy, or, you know, that they had to be seen to be, you know, steady on America's promise. They couldn't just back down, even though they knew they couldn't win.
And why do you think the media here was so tardy in reporting this, just not prepared for geopolitics on a weekend?
Possibly that. It is possible that having said, you know, Biden did make this big announcement that they would leave by September the 11th, you know, the 20th anniversary of the Twin Towers. But then I think later he said, look, well, we should be gone by the end of August. So possibly media, you know, worldwide, not just New Zealand media, we're planning to have a look at this, you know, this 20-year war. What was it all about? You know, will America ever go into any of these, you know, open-ended commitments ever again? You know, these sorts of huge issues. So yeah, possibly they're getting that stuff ready, and they were caught out as much as anyone by that sudden pullout. But we really could use, I think, some good retrospective on quite how this turned into a 20-year thing and what will now happen to that country, which has, you know, been invaded in the last 200 years by, you know, the Great Britain, the Soviet Union, and now the US-led forces, and now once again find itself plunged into civil war. The BBC have a bit of a tradition of doing these kind of retrospective documentary series with really important players in it. They did great ones after the war in former Yugoslavia, the Iraq war. They made one about Afghanistan after 10 years, but that was mainly focused on the NATO soldiers that fought there. But I do hope they do a kind of full retrospective on that whole Afghan story, because, you know, New Zealand, definitely part of it.
Egad, serious news, Colin, when Euro 2020 was all over the place.
Yeah, but funny that, eh? I mean, a European football tournament, it's big with sports fans and football fans, but not here. I guess the fact England did so well and we're still kind of part of the news anglosphere, I think it shows that. And I'm beginning to think that final and what led up to it, England-Italy at Wembley Stadium, might have been the most intensely covered sports event ever anywhere. You had England getting to the final and throwing off all their past failures. It's, you know, the blogs, so, you know, it's front page news in Britain as well as back page news feeding into the world's news system. Then, of course, all the social media stuff, even the songs, old and new, that get reprised and heard out here, football's coming home and all that jazz. And then, of course, all this playing out in a COVID environment. You know, the whole tournament actually took part in 11 countries, which I didn't actually realise till yesterday. So all of that, and then, of course, with the British situation, you know, the politicians trying to ride on this, a kind of the team taking an anti-racist stance, and the politicians criticising it, all that has come back to bite them. So a whole lot of stuff, the culture war, sports, politics, everything, I think probably the most intense sports thing we've ever seen.
And how have the media reacted to England's defeat?
Well, the British media didn't react so well, and some of that leaked out. There was one particular headline on the Herald site, which was about the dirty, cheating Italian assassins, which I thought was a bit ridiculous. All they were really talking about was the kind of rule-bending gamesmanship for which Italian teams are a little bit notorious, but that's all a legit part of the game.
Do those two things go together, rule-bending and gamesmanship?
I think they do. It's sort of anti-gamesmanship, but that's what they call it. But also the fact that, you know, as it happened, I watched that penalty shootout. There were best of five. England had five penalty takers. The three that missed were all young black players. And now when this happens, even in routine, you know, professional Premier League games, black players just get a whole lot of abuse on social media from anonymous people. And it's a trend that has been of concern for some time in the game. But when it happened at England, you know, I thought this is only a matter of time before this becomes a story. And sure enough, it did. So you have now the British Football Association saying, look, these platforms like Facebook and Instagram, you know, as one person put it, you could have an intern with a smartphone and a delete button who could weed out this stuff following the players' accounts. So the likes of Marcus Rashford and, you know, that 19-year-old Bukayo Saka Arsenal player, you know, he's a teenager and he was getting racist abuse just because he missed a penalty. You know, the width of half a post was the difference between England winning and losing, and none of this stuff would be in the news if they'd won. But yeah, the weirdness of our times and the racism they focused. But the media, the mainstream sports media, has rounded. They support the team. They say they're proud of them. If anything, they say the politicians, who some of whom, to score political points, actually undercut their anti-racist stance, the taking of the knee on the field, which they've been doing since the Black Lives Matter movement erupted. Now you've got the bandwagon riding politicians who are now putting on the shirt. In one case, I think the treasurer had bought a brand new shirt and the tag was still showing as he tried to do a social media post to get behind the team. They were the ones who were saying it was gesture politics and the team shouldn't be doing it, so at least three or four prominent politicians in Boris Johnson's cabinet. So yes, those who tried to ride the bandwagon once the England team were doing well are now suffering the consequences of apparently contributing to the kind of racist backlash that the players have suffered from just idiots online.
Now, I see there's a petition at the moment for a lifetime ban from football matches for racists. It's neared about 1 million signatures in just 24 hours, and it's a proposal from fans which follows abuse online and offline aimed at England players after this defeat in the Euro 2020, and they just won't be able to go to any football match. I think that's a good one.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, because it's entirely possible, you'd think, if these platforms can sort out things for decency purposes and for copyright, then you'd think it shouldn't be beyond their ken to isolate the accounts that are doing this stuff. And if the supporters themselves police it online or help to by the means of the thing you've mentioned there, then that's all good.
And the fans' reaction, the England fans' reaction before the game, breaking into Wembley, and then afterwards, that's been making headlines too, but not in a good way, unfortunately.
No, and you do wonder whether it's, a handful of people. Of course, these days you see those scenes and, they're amplified and it looks like thousands upon thousands of people. It could have just been handfuls within a stadium that was mostly well-behaved of 66,000. But I remember this from the last time England hosted that tournament. England played Germany, got knocked out. There was a lot of bitterness, a lot of drunkenness late at night, just people who couldn't handle it. There were some attacks on supposedly German people in the streets and German cars. So with that in mind, I did love this comedy announcement that was made before the final. This was a UK-based Italian comedian guy called Sam Piccone, and he made this statement on behalf of UK-based Italians before the match.
Please do not damage Italian independent businesses. And in exchange, we will allow you to destroy the following restaurants. Bella Italia, Ask Italian, Spaghetti House, Zizi, Domino's. Sorry, even just the word, it makes me, come si dice, indigestione. Papa John's, Pizza Hut, and any pizzeria that has even a trace of pineapple in the kitchen.
Domino's.
Yeah, I love that. So he's reading out basically all the chain stores that you see on every high street and say, yeah, you go for Domino's, go for Pizza Hut, trash those, we're fine with that. And the funny thing was, it's a brilliant little video because what he did was he delivered it. Like, do you remember that thing with Ronaldo when he sat in front of the board with all the sponsors' names? They had the Coca-Cola bottles.
Yeah, that's right.
So he moved them to the side and said, don't drink that, drink water. So this guy, Sam, he sat down, did the same thing, moved the Coca-Cola bottles aside, put down two bottles of Moretti beer, moved the cans to one side and put down two cans of Italian tomatoes, and then read that little thing. And at the very end, after he'd finished his plea, he clutched a bottle of olive oil and took a big slug out of that for the final shot with all the sponsors' logos in the back. So, yeah, very well done.
You'd have to say there's nothing like Italian food, though, is there, when it's well done?
No, and they like it in England too, I can assure you of that.
Who were you picking to take out the Euro final?
Oh, I just couldn't say. I mean, I thought the Italians looked pretty good. But the whole English thing, the whole woe and the 50 years of pain and all that jazz, it is such an anchor on them. So I didn't know, but they looked like a different team, so who knew? But I think in the end, they'll get over it. And it was a spectacle to get to a final, play it at home. Should have been fun, but just weird how literally the width of a post on one of those penalty kicks mean there's all this recrimination and upset. And none of that, I don't think, would be happening if they were still drinking and dancing in the streets, having won the thing after all those years.
Oh, absolutely not. Hey, Colin, thank you very much. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks' time.
Sure thing.